Very good morning to you. Welcome into today's programme. The comment lines are open. 0870 958 968. Yesterday, or previously during the week there, we received an email. Hi Keith, I picked up this wonderful book in Charlie Burns bookstore a few weeks ago, and I felt that you and your listeners would love the writer's No Blame telling of her journey through pregnancy and having her baby adopted in the 1980s. Her husband has written a courageous chapter at the very end. Many congrats and on your induction into the Hall of Fame. And that was signed by Marion in Renmore. The book in question that she was talking about, I had just finished reading on the day in question that it came in, and the book is called Does My Son Take Sugar? An Irish Mother's Memoir. Etna Ring and her husband join me, but Etna joins me first, sitting up. So Etna, good morning to you.
Good morning.
I'll pull you in tight into that there, okay, if you don't mind.
Thank you, Keith.
Congratulations, first off. Let's go back to the 80s, because the 80s, I grew up in the 80s, different time, and you found out that you were pregnant.
Yes, in 1983.
83.
Yes.
Different times to now.
Different times to now. Very scared. Yes, I had been going out with my boyfriend for about a year and a half, 2 years, and I just came to the realisation I may be pregnant.
Now, you thought about it up to that, and you hadn't had your period, and you thought about it up to that, and then you couldn't go to the chemist, of course, to get pregnancy tests, and if you did, they were expensive. And
yes.
So you take us on this journey of 1983.
Yes.
And then you solidly found out you were pregnant.
Yes.
But in 83, you couldn't walk around with a child if you didn't have a ring on your finger.
Absolutely. And it's actually strange when you hear people talking about my book, because the people that are in their early 20s are saying to their parents, "Ma'am, what are you reading?" And when they say, "This is Etna's book," and they said, "But how do you mean you couldn't keep a baby?" Like, yeah. So they just identify it with maybe the 1950s. And it's just amazing. They just can't comprehend that anybody in the 80s would have to give up your baby. And essentially, that is what you had to do.
I mean, those Catholic, with no disrespect, those Catholic agencies tasked with the case of taking the mother from wherever the pregnancy was, putting them into an institution, the child being born and the child being put up for adoption.
Yes. And it was just commonplace. Nobody made waves. You just went along. You really felt like just a bold child.
Mm-hmm.
You never asked any questions. You probably told your immediate family, and they normally took it in turn just to organise everything. And in my case, I was sent to a house in Limerick, and I stayed there for a couple of months. And it was just a given. And, of course, we had no social media, so you were just literally on your own for a couple of months.
But it was the stigma that was attached to it, which isn't now.
Yes.
But the stigma for the family.
Absolutely.
The firm stigma that
yes.
was there.
Yes.
Kind of forced. You had no option but to go.
Absolutely no option. Nor did you think you could have an option. It was just a given.
Mm.
It was just a given. You just sat there, told your family, and things were put in place, and you just got your suitcase and left.
And that was it?
That was it.
And was there contact with family while you were at that house in Limerick?
Yes. But again, you have to go back to the 1980s. We had no mobile phones, so my family came down to see me. But that was it. You got one visit, nothing in between the weeks. I hadn't told any of my friends. So all that knew was my boss where I worked, my boyfriend and my immediate family. That was it. Nobody else.
So you disappeared into the ether from your friends.
Yes. There was a story made up that I went to France to be an au pair. And like that, you would be sending letters over to a nun in France and she would post the letters back.
No, it's not.
Yeah. So, but because there was no mobile phones, people presumed you were in France.
Yeah.
I was like a detective. I would not date the letters in case they said, "How come this letter took 5 weeks to get there?" So you just wrote like a generic letter on a regular basis, and that was it. And nobody suspected that I was anywhere else but France. Well, my close friends would have thought I was in France.
Mm.
Rumour may have been around the town.
And was it the stigma, when you look back on it now, because you've written a big book beautifully. Is this the first book you've written?
The first and only, I presume.
You have a lovely style of writing about
it. Thank you.
You write from the heart, and you don't hold anything back.
No, because you see, every mother will know the love for a mother for a child is so huge. And when you write, you can only write the truth.
It's brave though.
It's brave.
It's brave, but it's now 2022 and it's accepted.
Yes.
And now that's why we're gushing about
it. Yes. And the reason why also I wrote the book is the pain of adoption and the pain of loss. I mean, if anyone loses a child for any reason, the outpour of grief for that person is huge. And here you are with your story and it's hidden.
You start the book, but you're very personal. You don't hide anything, as I said, right through the whole book. And then take me through then to when the baby was born, or when it was coming close to the baby being born.
Yeah, well, I was staying with the family. My baby was due on the 23rd of May, but like all men, he was a little bit late. He arrived on the 29th of May. I had my baby during the night with the beautiful GP that looked after me while I was down there. But the situation was, you're just there in a hospital, been a mother for the first time, no support, no nurse was trained or thought of saying to me, would you like to go and see your son in the cubicle? Maybe you should hold him. So there was no direction, and you didn't feel you deserved direction, but looking back, it was awful to be just left like that.
So you gave birth then in Limerick opposite the old Jury's Hotel.
Yes, there. Yeah.
And again, back then you would have been looked on with disdain that you'd got pregnant and had a child outside marriage.
Yes. And I would have been...
That's the way you were treated.
Yes, and I would have been in a ward with married women. Yeah. So I passed his little cubicle and looked in at him for hours, wondering, should I go in? Because again, I had no clarity. I just had insurmountable grief. And sometimes I would go in and pick him up, but I didn't know if that was the right thing or the wrong thing. And the sad thing is, nobody gave me direction as to say, he will be with us for 3 days until he has his certain tests done. You will be leaving the following day. Nobody asked, would you like a cup of coffee? And then suddenly, as I walked down a corridor, the nurse came up on the Friday and said, you can go now. He's gone.
That was it.
And that was it.
That cold.
And I had to go in and pick up my little suitcase and presume, with no phones, you had no contact with the outside world, I presumed my host family were outside. And I call him Michael in the book, who's a very kind man. I just sat in the car with him. We drove home the couple of miles and I climbed them stairs into my bedroom and I did 100 sit-ups so that I wouldn't come back with a belly on me. Because in my naivety, I thought if you had a big belly, well, then you had a baby. So yeah. I thought if I came home slim, then people would say, no, no, she doesn't look like she had a baby. So, yeah. I mean, to be in that mindset, a frightened 19-year-old sitting down doing sit-ups, because of the shame that was attached.
And the irony of the situation is that the others, the married people that were in the ward with you, were all elated for having their
Yes, of course. Of
you experienced that later in life when you had twins. But I mean, that's kind of the irony of the situation.
Yes.
How cold and clinical can a flipping human being be to say to you, you can go now, he's gone.
He's gone.
And he was.
But like, I didn't look at it like that.
Because you were so young.
I was so young. And I felt the bold label child. So I was deserving of this treatment.
And how long then did you stay in Limerick before going back with the flat belly?
I stayed for 2 weeks with a flat belly.
The flat belly. And then back.
So I came back, yeah.
Yeah. And then through all of this then, could you keep in contact with your boyfriend? Now husband?
Oh yes. But you see, of course, you're looking again like the scorned, bold child that has brought huge shame to the family. Not that anybody was telling me I was a bold child, but you felt it.
You knew.
So to introduce the love of my life again wouldn't appear to be a great fix. Because I'm sure we were a very close family. I'm sure they were looking on. Well, if this didn't work, it's hardly going to work.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they would have wished for me to just maybe be on my own so I didn't, you know, incur any more pain.
So you got on with your life.
I got on with my life, but a totally different person.
Huge chunk. Something that was inside you for 9 months was gone.
Yes, yeah.
Whether it was right or whether it was wrong in your head.
Absolutely.
Part of you was missing.
I mean, honestly, it just changed me as a person.
Mm.
Yeah, I was so sad.
So take me through life then. Take me meander, without taking away from the book.
Well, we meandered along. We had, myself and Joe had contact. Of course, we didn't have counselling, either one of us. We didn't really know how anyone was feeling in the relationship. You just tipped along and with no clarity, no understanding of life. Like, we had no counselling, no nothing. So you're just winging it. And you actually don't know if this is the right thing or the wrong thing to do. You know, but the bond was there.
But you kind of go with the heart.
Yes, of course.
They all.
But it's hard when you're living at home and wondering what's the best thing to do.
Yeah, and I'm sure, and again, not judging your family, but, you know, make sure this doesn't happen again now.
Exactly.
You know, this, yes, this once is enough.
Well, just they probably didn't want a relationship not to be good and healthy and strong.
Yeah, yeah. So then go forward and you got married.
Yes, in 91.
91. So were you always thinking?
Oh, always. I mean, since I've written the book, I get, I mean, I got letters and letters for days. And like a local lady wrote to me and just said she married her boyfriend, the husband, and she had four children. And she said she never took a photograph of a communion or a confirmation ever of her four children because the fifth child was missing. So even though you do continue and life is pretty good, it's just that void.
Mm.
It's huge.
So you went on, you got married, you had...
We had triplets.
Twins. Triplets.
Triplets, yes, triplets. In 97.
That was some achievement.
It was some achievement.
And talk to him privately about that now. Yeah. See, a triplet. So
yes.
Where did I pick the twins up? And I did read it. So I have triplets.
Yes, yeah, triplets. Yeah, so they're now 25.
25.
So we decided to tell them when they were 9.
Good on you.
Because I felt the truth, even though it wasn't the whole truth, society didn't know, but I felt within our family and within our lives, we needed to be truthful and honest. So we told the children. And funnily, my youngest son now, he's the youngest triplet, at 9, he said to me, "Well, did you keep the receipt, Mom? Can we go back and get him?" So I thought it was so cute and heartfelt, you know.
So it was 2000 then. What year was he born?
He was born in 97. Neely was born in 84. And we told the children when they were 9.
Wow.
Yeah. So, big thing, you know, big the secrecy had to stop, really. So.
And when you did tell them then, to the extended family, both yours and Joe's ethnicism family?
Well, they would have known probably. Well, shortly, maybe after that.
Were they shocked that you told?
Some knew, some didn't know.
It was your business, your business.
Yes, and you know what? I often say to people, it's very hard to tell somebody you had a baby if you don't have a reunion.
Mm.
It's like saying I have a Lamborghini and it's yellow, but I'm not showing it to you.
Yeah.
So people say, well, that's not true, or it's not a whole story. So it's nicer when people knew. If you had the reunion, you have a full story to tell.
Mm. Must have been difficult. I'm thinking because you're part of a political dynasty, whether you like it or not.
Yes.
On his side. So that must have even made it more difficult because... And you, as the mom?
No, I mean, my difficulty was my pain and losing my child. And whatever sadness came on any day for his birthday was absolutely huge. That was the saddest day.
So always. Oh, yeah, it has to be. Yeah. Take me to reconciliation. At what stage was the first step taken?
Well, even though I felt, as again, it's my whole thing, I felt like a bold child, I had the strength at the time of relinquishment to say to the society, I want this child to be the first child in a family, because I felt, wow, you know, did you hear the Welsh family got a baby? Mm-hmm. You know, when you get to baby 3 or 4, it's not as exciting.
No.
So I felt if he was first, it would be amazing. I wanted him to be in a Catholic home. That was my history, I suppose. And I wanted a picture and a letter every year just to see how he was doing. And I felt I could ask that because it was really about the child.
Now, did you ask that at 19 years of age in the hospital?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, because that was my only strength.
And did you get it?
I did.
Every year.
I did to a point. Innately, I knew that Neil's mum was an amazing person. But because of the secrecy, she had to send the letter and the picture through the agency, and the agency had to send it to me because none of us would have had each other's addresses. But again, one of these nuns down below would not send the pictures or the letter in time for the birthday. And I really knew that Neil's mum had done all that, but I would have to ring and just ask for the letters two or three times within so that week.
They took control of the situation.
They took control, and the excuse was, oh, I didn't recognise that child. Oh, does he have a sibling? Oh, I see that in the picture. Or, oh, I didn't have any stamps. And I mean, you know, you kind of think, do you want me to send you down a roll of like 500 stamps? To be so cold and calculated. And it was just so sad. And to see him visually at his fourth or fifth or sixth birthday was amazing.
Yeah.
But not to have that. And I went home and opened that door and saw the mat empty again. No letter. Just because they didn't care.
It was the nun in question or the nuns in question having the power to control that.
Yes,
that's about.
Well, that's my point. If adoption was the solution, where was the humanity and the kindness?
Never came into it.
Never came into it.
Never, ever came into it. And then when did she meet up?
Well, because Neil's mum was so nice, she kept writing to me. And then she said that she had told Neely all the time that we were together, myself and Joe, that we got married, that he had true siblings. And she did say to him that I was anxious to meet him. And she's such a kind person. She gave Neil my mobile, but she didn't tell me she gave him the mobile in case he didn't ring me for months.
Yeah.
So out of the blue on a Thursday evening, I get a phone call. Hi, this is Neely. And I'm thinking, you know, you just don't expect it. And that was a Thursday evening, and he came the following Saturday to meet us.
Wow.
Which was beautiful.
And
he was 24.
Still in contact?
Still in contact. He's just an amazing guy.
Good.
Yeah.
And how does he fit in with the triplets? Who are what age now?
They're 25.
25.
Yes, and he's 38. So there is a divide in years, but not in emotion. So it's not they'll be on the phone every 2 minutes, but when they meet up, they have a great chat.
Yeah.
You know, it's lovely to see.
And have you had the frank discussion with him over what happened? And he had a wonderful time with his adoptive parents.
Yes.
But have you had that conversation?
Do you know what? He is a guy that gets it. He understands the situation of the 80s.
Yeah.
And when I wrote the book, he was the first one outside my husband and the children to read it. And that it explains everything.
Yeah.
But my point to him was, this book goes in the bin if you're not happy with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the love I would have for my child.
Before you went to publication?
Oh, absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely. He would be our circle. And if he didn't like that, it wouldn't have been printed, ever.
So the pain that you spoke about.
Yes.
Has that kind of eased in any way?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a boulder on my shoulders and now it's like a stone in my pocket, the pain.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, because, you know, you can see this guy, he's a grown man, and when you get older in life, when your children get older, they don't need you, inverted commas, as much. So I look at him now as an individual. So, you know what I mean? Even though he is my son, he is a fully grown man and it's lovely that we can meet and talk with him.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, the major pain is gone.
Yeah.
Because the result is very good.
Thank God.
But my reason for writing as well, the book, there's so many women out there having a cup of tea in their homes this moment, crying over their story, maybe not having told anybody.
Yeah.
And I would love women to get strength just to confide in one pal. And if they're concerned about that, to confide in somebody like a social worker or just to talk about their pain.
Because you're not alone.
It's not alone.
Thousands and thousands out there.
You know, absolutely not alone. And it's just, they need to just unload that burden from the pit of their tummy. You know, it's just too difficult to live with that.
Before I go to Joe, I mean, you've worked very hard.
Yes.
Because I dealt with Joe in a different guise altogether a few years ago. And what I couldn't get over about the conversation I had with him was he ran a cafe restaurant.
Yes, for 24 years.
Did you just immerse yourself in that then? To try and cope?
See, I am very strong and I do cope.
Do you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, whatever life throws at me, I cope. And I have wonderful friends. Like, absolutely fabulous friends, you know? And I said one time when I was talking about this that my friends were very cross with me for not telling them that I was pregnant, that they would have helped. And they were again cross with me for using the word cross. They said, we weren't cross, we were upset that you didn't talk to us, but you were just afraid.
It was a different time.
Oh, absolutely. You just had to keep that secret.
You were 19, so you were at the time.
Yeah.
So, Joe sits opposite me today. I've never seen him as quiet for so long in all my life.
I have him trained finally, Keith.
I do not.
It took a long time.
If you had lent me the remote control a few years ago, I was elected altogether. Joe, we've got a good few comments coming in, but the typical one that comes in, Keith Finnegan Show now, 10:15. And where was the father of the child infuriated that men were never to blame? But you are the father of the child and you're sitting here with your wonderful wife and you're very proud of what she's achieved.
Yeah. It's still, Keith, as you said, I am very quiet because it hits me hard.
But is that because of what you've been through in life and the way it all unfolded?
Yeah, I just feel that maybe the 24-year-old lad that was there and the 64-year-old lad is here now is a different lad. And back then, things were different. And I look back and I think, should I have done more? Could I have done more?
But do you know what would happen? I don't think you could have, because you wouldn't have been allowed to do
so. I know. And the thing was, Keith...
But you can't look back either.
Yeah.
You have to now look forward. Look at where you are, the two.
Yeah, well, we're very lucky. And that young fellow we have is a wonderful young fellow. But the thing is, it all started really... Etna was writing the book and I said to her, would you like me to write a chapter? And she said, yeah, sure, why not? So I thought just by sitting down, I'd write a chapter, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, just say it as it was. So when I started it, Keith, it took me something like 6 months to write that 21 pages. And the reason was I never visited it, never went there, never dealt with it. And it was like, I suppose, I counseled myself. So by writing it, I actually did counsel myself. I fixed what I feel better from doing it. And the guilt doesn't go away. I still feel every day I should have done more and could have done more. And as you say, maybe not. At times we're in it.
But haven't you done it since?
I have indeed. And we are tight.
If you haven't, now I'll be sending you
home. Yeah, we're in trouble. No, Keith, we are tight. And I was so lucky that we did, because, you know, life is funny, you know. And I remember when I wrote the chapter, I didn't realise the door would open for everybody, because I have been in many places since, Keith, and the amount of men that have come up to me, men, grown men, because looking back, there's only one book written by a man about his side of a story or adoption, and I think it's because they feel so guilty. They really just feel so guilty about the way they've been treated. And there's some very, very good men out there. And back at the time, even I said, I was young and a bit daft and a bit wild and I had a bit of living to do. And
Back then.
Well, I haven't stopped.
The last time I met you were worse.
But
anyway.
But going back to it, I just felt at the time I wasn't ready. And yet the pressure might have been on if I had. Should I have gotten married? Should I have done the right thing? And yet I look back and think, if I had, I don't think things would have ended up the way they would have, because there probably would have been that little bit of want still in me, and I'd have often wondered and should I, and I don't think we would be together today, been honest, and yet we are so tight. And the story that ended up the way it did, not all of them do, but the story we have is just one of the wonderful ones. We are just all great friends, and there's just some horror stories out there. It's just, I still feel, every day I just feel... Yeah. Not every day, but when I think about it, and when I come into a studio and listen to her story again, it hits me so hard that maybe I should have done more.
I genuinely, looking you straight in the eye, I don't think you could have. In that era, would you have stood up to her family? Brave man. Mm. You couldn't do it.
Yeah. I just feel that there's a voice needed there for men, maybe. That's what I've noticed since the book was written and we've been out there. I've met a few guys and they've come to me privately and they're in bits, they don't know what to do. So I said,
you're a good listener, so you can...
Yeah, a good listener. That's what I said. I said, just go and read the book, come back and look, we'll see, can we do something with it?
Have you had much interest from anybody from a TV point of view? I don't mean TV interviews point of view, but it's something that could be turned into a little mini-series.
No.
You haven't had? No, you haven't had the call from...
No, not yet.
I think it could, to be honest. I really do. And you refer to it as being an Irish mother's memoir. I'm looking at the phone lines today and they're quiet. And do you know why? They're listening.
They're listening.
Yeah, they're listening.
Yes.
Where can they get the wonderful, and nobody, no, Mark Roberts, get away, you're not getting a copy of mine. Does my mother take sugar in
does
Irish
my
water?
Son does my take sugar?
Does my son?
And that's why I called it that was.
I can't even see the title.
Why I called it that was when he was coming to my house in August 2008 to meet us, I was prepping the house, flowers, every press cleaned in the house as if he'd be looking in the presses. And I was making tea and a pot of coffee, and I had the jug, milk jug, not the milk carton. And then I just thought, oh, I wonder, oh, does maybe he takes sugar. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, imagine, I actually don't know, does my son take sugar? So that stayed with me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Somebody just said here, just one comment, and I think it kind of summarises it all together. The Catholic Church tried that with us. They tried everything to split us up 40 years. On the 1st of December, we are still together and still in love.
Oh.
There you go.
Oh, well done.
Well done. Are you signing copies? Well, you're signing them in Westport, I take it. But are you signing?
I normally do, if I leave books into any shop, I have them signed.
Good.
So they're in Charlie Burns at the moment and in Kenny's. And you can contact me also on etnaring.com. It's nice and simple.
It's now ring.com from
yes.
there.
Yes, yeah.
Keep up. You will get queries on this one. You know that you're going to get a query as to you know, it would make a little series or documentary.
Oh, thank you very much.
It would. No, it's lovely. Well done to you. Thank you both.
Thank you very much.
Does my son have to clean my glasses now? Does my son take sugar in Irish mothers? And Joe, thanks for popping into it. Health good before I let you go?
100%, Keith. I'm doing very, very well. 6-7 years now since we did our interview, I think, for the cancer, and yeah, we're doing good.
Good stuff.
100%.
Thank you very much.
Mind yourself. I think he wants to bring in a cruise straight away. Yesterday, so he does. Maybe a boat up the car or something.
We do that.
I'm happy in Westport. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Cindy, for joining us today. And again, the book, if you want to get further details on it, and just buy it and have a look at it. Does My Son Take Sugar? An Irish Mother's Memoir by Ethna Ring. I know I'm running wild late today, lads, but it's Friday and I get away with it and I take responsibility for it. But we're back just after these.
Galway Talks in association with Tesco. Tesco Tune, now open.
Hey, very good morning to you. Welcome on into today's programme. The comment lines are all open if you want to get through to us on 0870-958-968. A couple of weeks ago, if not months ago at this stage, I'm getting older, I went out to Esker Monastery, and at the time the fathers indeed were finishing up and the novena was finishing, and they were handing it over to the Ukrainian refugees that would be coming into Galway. Lizzie Harrison is Secretary of CURB, a voluntary committee made up of Ukrainian residents and local volunteers, and she joins me in studio today with many other nice people that have settled in Esker. Lizzie, good morning to you. How are you today?
I'm good, yeah, it's great. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today.
No bother at all. How many residents roughly? CURB, first off, is a voluntary group.
Yeah, we're just a voluntary group, but it's made up of Ukrainians and local volunteers.
Yeah, and how are they all settling in?
They love Esker. I mean, Esker is such a beautiful place, you know, it yourself. I worked there myself and I live right beside it, and I sing there at the novenas and that. And Esker is still open for business. We still have Mass there daily and Mass on a Sunday, and the St. Gerard Magella. There's lots of babies been born all around Galway because the St. George Magella Novena is still happening on the 10th and 11th of October. So it's open until the 30th of November.
Yeah.
And at that stage, then it will be for the residents.
And so. I mean, Culture Night is tonight.
Yeah.
And again, they're fitting into...
They're integrating into the community, getting involved. Great singing voices in Esker, as is the tradition of Esker. So they're joining in with Corley Kayla in Athenry tonight for Culture Night. They have an event at 6:30 today.
You'll do anything for a hooli. Julia, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine, thank you.
Pull you into that there slightly. How long are you in Ireland?
About 2 months now.
And what is it like for you?
First of all, I want to say a very big thanks to all the people who support us here, and it's very big support to all Irish people.
And are you worried about home all the time?
We are here, like I am here with my two daughters and my family and my husband and my friends. They are all in Ukraine, and of course we are miss them a lot.
You have to miss them. And do you worry every day about them?
Of course, there is no safe place now in Ukraine, unfortunately.
So you're in Esker? You're in the middle of the country, so you have. You've God all around you. And but you're settling in okay.
Yeah, it's definitely okay. With support of government and with support of Irish people, it's amazingly, they are amazingly nice to us and kind to us. Mm. And that's why all of our group, we want to say thank you for everyone.
And how many, Lizzie, roughly are in Esker at this stage?
Yeah, there's 150 residents.
Holy God, that's a small village.
Yeah, 31 children. We kitted out 31 children thanks to a donation. I've forgotten the lady's name. I look it up before I go. A singer in Athenry who had a concert and raised a donation. We were able to kit out 31 children in school uniforms and a time in school. Had six pupils left in it, and now there are 13 more Ukrainians have joined the school. And so it took us a while to get a bus, but thanks to GRD, we got a little bit of funding. We got a bus for 2 weeks, and please God that the bus Aaron will pull in, and they started school on Wednesday. Mm. And when I arrived on Wednesday evening for a meeting, I was greeted by 10 children who in turn told me, my name is Mark, my name is, and were so excited to show me what they'd learned that day in a time in school. So it's wonderful to see a rural community being regenerated by these people coming in. Yeah,
good stuff. And Julia, thanks for joining us. I'm going to bring your colleague over there and come on in and join us today. Sure, we'd have a cheer for everyone. How are you? How are you enjoying Esker? And how long are you in Ireland?
I'm in Ireland for 2 months now. Thank you very much. I'm very grateful to Irish people because, you know, we've been through some bad things in our lives. Somebody was separated from their family and friends, and somebody else was in Russian death camps. And I was personally captured by Russian soldiers on the very first day of war when we went down to our basement. And these people, they aimed me in the forehead in front of my 8-year-old daughter. And it was very hard, and we had 7 more children with us. Wow. And I wanted to cover them with myself, with my body. And
that was later day one of the war that happened.
Yes, and we spent there 3 weeks, and I did my best to do anything and everything to help them to maintain the calm mindset. We played with them, we sang the songs, we learned some rhymes, so they can feel safe. And now we feel safe here in your land, and huge thanks. But we actually want to go home. It's where we belong.
Soon, hopefully. Soon. And who have you left it behind? Who's left in Ukraine?
My parents were left in Ukraine, and my parents-in-law and all of my friends are there, my brother, his wife, my niece.
They're all there.
Yes.
And do you think about them every minute of every day?
Certainly, of course.
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully. Yes. I'm kind of hoping that
A bit
of common sense might kick in. Yeah. Thanks indeed for joining us today. Can I bring you in with to me as well, if you don't mind? It's like moving chair. It's where we couldn't afford an extra chair in here today. What is your name? Sorry.
Hello, my name is Ilaria. Yeah, I'm living in Esker too. I'm arrived to Ireland like 2 months ago, maybe less. But thank you really for all Irish people for supporting. Yeah, and
who have you left at home then? Who's left behind working at home and fighting?
I work in a hospital. I'm a radiographer, and my husband is a surgeon. And yeah, now we separate because he must stay in Ukraine.
He must work.
Yeah, and help the Ukrainian people because it's his responsibility. Yeah, and my parents stay in Ukraine too. Now.
It's very difficult. A radiographer.
Yeah.
Radiographer.
Yeah.
And a surgeon, and you're separated because of this flipping war.
Yeah, we celebrate our first wedding anniversary like separately months ago. Yeah, it's too hard.
It's too hard. Yeah.
Yeah.
Listen, don't say sorry. You deserve, you've gone through hell even getting here. And I hope that it all comes together. Won't you keep us fully informed, Lizzie? What's Lizzie doing over there now?
I'm hiding over here.
You're hiding over there.
I'm looking for the name. I'm so bad at names.
That's okay.
Especially when I'm under pressure. Sinead Murphy is the lady.
Sinead Murphy.
A singer from Athenry who donated 2,400, imagine, to Curve support the Ukrainians in Oscar.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Oz.
Yeah, mind yourself, and I'm going to bring you in and to join me if you don't mind as well.
Yeah.
And what is your name, can I ask you?
My name is Paulina.
And you're a translator and a bit of everything, I'm told, is it?
Yes. But first of all, I think I'm a painter. So I'm kind of an artist, yes.
You're an artist. Well, we like artists.
Well.
We like her. I'm married to an artist, so we like artists in this studio, so we do. And what type of art do you do?
Just painting everything on canvas.
Good. So how long are you in Esker?
About 2 months, Isam.
And you're enjoying it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Really like Galway.
But you want to get home as well?
Yes, of course.
You want to get home?
Yes. My city right now is occupied, so I'm waiting here to...
Yeah. And you have to be thinking of home all the time.
Yes, of course I do.
Yeah.
And Pauline was in a rally over there, weren't you? But, yeah.
Yes, I was at the rally in Kherson, that's my city in Ukraine. So, well, it was pretty scary and excited, I can say. Because we had like big flag of Ukraine, like 200 meters. Jeez. And I was in front of line with that flag. And we had rally like in 1 meter, near tanks and cars.
Paulina is very brave.
Yes.
I would like Paulina to be on my side if I was in trouble.
She certainly sounds it.
Yeah.
How can people, Lizzie Harrison, help the CURV, the voluntary committee made up indeed for Ukrainian residents? When you see these lovely people here today, how can they help?
I suppose it would be lovely if people would donate to CURV. We have an account in Athenry Credit Union. I think... most of all, the Ukrainian women and men I've met just want to meet Irish people, get to know Irish people. We share really a lot in common. The women I've met are very ambitious, very proud of their children, family people. And the men that are here are here for a reason.
Okay.
You know, some of them have escaped from Russians, you know, that maybe have health problems or different reasons. I suppose sometimes people, when they don't know the Ukrainians, they may be a little bit afraid, or who are these people coming to our country? Just come along and meet them and be friendly. Okay. And I have got so much more from, I have been a family carer for 7 years. It's been quite isolating. I've made friends. Very happy to know these people, yeah.
All right, Lizzie, thanks for joining us today with all of your guests indeed. And I'm sorry for Ilaria getting upset there. I hope she can just cope with it all. It's not just easy at all.
Yeah.
I'm going to take a short commercial break, but if you want to get in contact with Lizzie Harrison, make contact with us here and we can put you in contact with Lizzie. And you can do so on 091-770-077 today. If you want to go and talk or meet or talk to the people in question, feel free to do so. 150 new residents in and around Esker. Sure, it's a small village. It's a big village now too. Quick commercial break, back just after these.
Galway Talks in association with Tesco Home Delivery. Shop from the comfort of your home and we'll deliver at a time that suits you.
Now, a very good morning to you. As you would expect, there's one or two very negative comments coming in about Ethel's book. And you know what? You're entitled to your thought process, each and every one of you. But I have to say that I found her book quite fascinating. I found her interview extremely honest. And for that, I'm eternally grateful. Fantastic to Joe and Ethna. Well done. And Keith, I have a tear in my eye listening to Joe and Ethna. I lost a daughter in a similar fashion in the 1970s, and I've never got over it. P.S. I haven't got married or had children since. There you go. And on the other lines coming into us, 53995 is Oxygen One there. We don't use it very often, but it's still very busy out there. Just listening to that lady and her husband, Joe, talking about how they gave up their baby for adoption years ago. I didn't catch the name of the book she wrote. I'm very interested in the name. Many thanks. That comes from Tricia. Tricia, it's here, and it's called Does My Son Take Sugar? An Irish Mother's Memoir. And it's by Ethna Ring. It's available in Charlie Burns. It's available in kennys.ie. It's available everywhere, so it is. And do you know what? I think she should be given an Oscar for being as honest as she has been in that book. And I think it's going to, if we could be an open and honest society, I think it's going to start a lot of debate around the kitchen table in relation to what happened back in the 80s and 70s as well. Let's not forget.
Galway Talks in association with the Tesco Community Fund, supporting local community projects with €1 million this year.